On Thursday of this week, we'll celebrate our National Day of Thanksgiving, and we'll eat a lot, and we'll think about all of the blessings and all of the freedoms that we have. But interestingly, very much linked with our holiday is a group who lived a long time ago that we just simply refer to as the Pilgrims. It's interesting that we don't know a lot about the Pilgrims anymore. We tend to associate them with big funny hats and coming over on a ship, and that's about all that we know. However, if we look into their history, we find that this was a group of people who had determined that where they were was no longer acceptable for their spiritual growth. Now, they were concerned about problems that they were having in their churches. They were concerned about the influence of society on their children. And so, taking a very striking move, they set out to a homeland that they didn't know, first of all, what it was going to be like, second of all, that it would be hospitable to them. They didn't understand any of these things, but nonetheless, they made their efforts to go. You and I would not agree with everything the Pilgrims taught spiritually. We would have our differences with some of their takes on various biblical principles. But when we think about their lives and when we think about the audacity that they had to strike out in such a way to do what they felt like was right, I can't help but be reminded of what the Lord says concerning us. As Peter is writing, he says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles," or sojourners and pilgrims, "to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul." Very much like those people years ago, you and I are on a journey. And the concept of pilgrimage is nothing new to the people of God. In fact, as we look in the Bible, we find that there were some pilgrims whose story continues really throughout the entire Bible. Not only are we told about their lives, but even after their deaths, they're used as examples. They're used to show us what we should be like and perhaps even what we should not be like. So this morning, I'd like to focus on three pilgrims. I'd like for us to look at their journey, to look at their response to God. And in so doing, to understand what you and I should be like, as well as what we should avoid in our own pilgrimage through this earth. Let's begin with perhaps one of the most important men in the Bible story. When we look in Genesis chapter 12, we find Abraham introduced to us, and God makes three promises to him that we will see unfolded throughout the rest of the Bible. The last of those promises, of course, relating directly to us, in the fact that Abraham would have a family member through whom all of the families of the earth would be blessed. But nonetheless, as we look at this man, we find in him a pilgrim who we might say was a pilgrim who had comfort and faith very much on a collision course in his life. What mankind would consider to be very comfortable, Abraham was quite willing to give up because of the faith that he had in God. If you will, go ahead and look back over to Hebrews chapter 11. We'll be looking at this passage here in just a minute again. And while you're doing that, let's talk a little bit about where Abraham left. You and I don't know perhaps a great deal about the ancient life that Abraham would have lived. But nonetheless, through archaeological research, we know a little bit about his homeland of Ur of the Chaldees. And it's no doubt that Abraham, as he lived there, had a very, very comfortable life. We look at this city, and for cities of that day and age, it was one of the most modern. It's one that had the most conveniences as we would think about it. And yet Abraham is told by the Lord, "I want you to leave this homeland. I want you to go somewhere else, and I'll tell you where it is when you get there." And I think when we realize just how comfortable a life Abraham most likely lived, I think all indications are he was probably a very prosperous man, very well off, therefore would have had the best that his homeland, his society could have given him. But yet listen to what happens when God says go. We look here once again in chapter 8 where Ethan just read, and we note that Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. We look at this passage, and as the Hebrew writer is stressing to us The reason these people are being highlighted, their faith in God. We're told with Abraham that he was willing to give up everything to become a pilgrim for the Lord. And what's so striking about this is he traded his foundation, he traded what he had built all of his life for a tent in a place where he really didn't know anything about where he was going, the kind of life he was lived, for what purpose? So that he could receive a foundation. He was willing to give up everything that he knew in order to follow God in a life that obviously was not as physically comfortable. But for what purpose? So that he could find the foundations that would last, that would make him better because of his relationship with God. As we think about this, I believe it's a good reminder for us that our pilgrimage is very much the same. We can become quite comfortable in this world. Our lifestyles can be quite comfortable. Everything about our lives can speak a comfort level that the world has never known before. But yet, for us, just as with Abraham, the Lord says, I want you to leave what is comfortable so that you can follow me and so that you can find that city that Abraham was looking for, that city with foundations. That's a hard thing to do. And the reason for that is because many times, just as Abraham, you and I are also faced with uncertainty. When we think about giving up our comfort zone, when we think about giving up what we know and what we've always done so that we can do what the Lord tells us to, that can, if we're not careful, fill us with this sense of foreboding, this idea of being uncertain. And when we do that, we simply look back to a man who is a giant in faith, a man who did not look back. A man who said, whatever the Lord tells me to do, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I think the Apostle Paul and Abraham were very much in agreement. Paul is saying in Philippians chapter 4 much of what Abraham did and how he believed. Paul says, not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I'm in to be content. I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. Here was another pilgrim. Here was a man who was taken from comfort in the life that he knew and began a journey very different. And so just as Abraham, he could say, where the Lord leads, that's where I'm going to follow. And that's what you and I need to be able to say as well. We need to understand that. And what I want us to realize is that there's going to come a time in our life, if we're faithful, when this is going to go from generalities into specifics. Many times I think, and we'll address this point here in a few minutes again, many times though I think what we find in our lives is that we attest, yes, I trust God. Yes, I believe that God is leading me. Yes, I'll do whatever God says to do. Until the time comes, and until God decides to take us on a journey. I imagine if you have been a faithful Christian for any length of years, you are very well aware in your life of one of those journeys where things have been uncertain, where you just didn't know how it was going to turn out, and what you had to do at that point was to turn your life over to God. That's exactly why it gives us those situations. Because like Abraham, this pilgrim who was facing the collision of comfort and faith, he wants us to make the right decision. He wants us to trust that we are going to follow him wherever he leads us. He wants us to be like the psalmist who said in chapter 9 and verse 10, and those who know your name put their trust in you. For you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. If you've been on one of those journeys and the Lord has led you through it, you can make that statement as well, can't you? That the Lord is not going to forsake those that He loves. He's not going to forsake those who are seeking after Him. That's what Abraham understood, and that's what we need to understand as well. But I believe even harder for this pilgrim than leaving his homeland was a decision that he had to face as well in his service to God. when God made it appear that what He had promised would not correspond with the action that He was called on to do. Here was Abraham, who had been promised this family as numerous as the stars of the heaven. Here was Abraham, who had been promised a family as numerous as the grains that are on the beach. And yet the son who had been given as this son of promise, the Lord said to this faithful pilgrim, I want you to take him. I want you to kill him. I want you to offer a sacrifice of your son for me. You talk about comfort and faith colliding. I don't know of a greater thing that could be asked for any parent. But especially in the case of Abraham, where every promise seemingly hinged on this child who had been given. But yet, how did Abraham respond to that? Still here in Hebrews chapter 11, the writer tells us, as we go down a little bit further, he says, verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promise was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. We look at this, and what we find is that Abraham was called upon to believe that in this pilgrimage that the Lord was directing him, that this was the right thing to do. How did he survive that? How was his faith able to meet that challenge that the Lord had presented to him? Well, it could not, unless it was unswerving in nature. And as the writer again tells us about this great man, we go down to verse 19, and here's what the writer says about Abraham. He says he considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Abraham said, I don't understand it. I don't know what's going on. But the Lord said to do it, so it's right to do. And the writer says that in Abraham's mind, the deed was as good as done. Though God stopped the knife, though God stopped the death, in Abraham's mind, he fully complied with that. What about you and I? When you and I think about the journeys that we're brought on, when it looks like that nothing is going to work out for the best, how do we handle it? When it looks like if we take the stand for right, when it looks like if we are fully faithful to God, it is going to slam us up against a wall, how do we react to it? So oftentimes, that's where our pilgrimage comes to an end, or at least for a period of time anyway. So often the case is we try to assume that God somehow really doesn't mean what He says, that somehow God is not really intending us to face this. But instead, like Abraham, what we've got to realize is that if God says to do it, we do it, and that good is going to come from it. Abraham teaches us that when we are pilgrims, our lives are not going to be lives of comfort. That when we are pilgrims, we are not always going to understand what's going on. But he also teaches us that as pilgrims, we can trust God. And that if we allow our faith to win out over our comfort, there will be a time when God will richly bless us by bringing us into His presence, into that city that Abraham was looking for, into that place for which he journeyed. And Abraham teaches us that if we trust God, God is fully competent to handle the details, to get us to where we belong. Let's talk about a second pilgrim on this journey. As Abraham was called to leave his home, he wasn't the only one who was called to leave home. He had a very faithful wife who I think oftentimes perhaps does not get the attention that she really deserves. We know that Sarah was a woman of great faith. And as we think about what she was called upon to do, we understand that, unfortunately, for many people years later after her life, what we basically remember is her laughter. That God said, this is the way it's going to be, that you're going to have a child in your old age, and that she laughed. And yes, she did. However, let's notice what the record tells us about that. Still here in Hebrews 11, back up to verse 11. about this situation. It says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Yes, Sarah did have a temporary lapse. I would think that any 90-year-old woman who is being told she was going to have a child might understand that. Yet what does the record say? The record said she trusted that God could carry this out. She trusted that God would be with her. And what's quite interesting is that though she is forgotten by many, she is not forgotten in the rest of the Bible, because she's going to be used as a very monumental figure in order to teach others how they are to live. I'd like for you to turn over with me to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. And as we look at here, this is a passage where Peter is talking about the roles of women and their relationship in Christianity to others. And I want us to note here, not particularly that point, but rather the point that he makes about Sarah. Picking up in verse 4, somewhat mid-thought, he says, "But let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands." Now here's Sarah being picked up as our example. Verse 6, it says, "As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening." Now, a lot of times we get tripped up on, say, Abraham being called Lord by Sarah. And we don't make it to the rest of the verse. But all of that saying is she trusted him. As the head of her household, she trusted that he knew what he was doing. But don't stop reading there. Peter also says, "And you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening." Now, in a passage that seems very much directed toward women, I want us to think about what Peter is saying. Have you ever considered what this pilgrimage meant for Sarah? Have you ever considered that when the Lord said to Abraham, go from your homeland to a place that I'll show you and I'll let you know when you get there, that he was also speaking that to Sarah? That she also was to pull up and to leave? I think most all of us would agree that women in general tend to be much more root-oriented. Women like stability. Women like the idea of having a home and a place that's somewhat permanent, as much as it can be here on this earth. And I don't think that Sarah was a lot different than that. Yet when the Lord said go, Sarah went. When the Lord said leave, that's exactly what she did. And I think as we look at this, we see a woman who trusted God and also trusted her godly husband. Here was a God who said, go, and Abraham said, yes, I'll go, and Sarah said, yes, you will go, and I'll go with you. That's an amazing faith. And for this pilgrim who was called to break all the roots, to tear away from everything that she had known, that's exactly what she did. And I think as well that Sarah also teaches us that here is a pilgrim who is living proof that the impossible is always possible with God. Here is a woman who is put in a situation that is just almost unimaginable, isn't it? Well beyond the years of having a family. Well beyond the time when even women of her own generation were having children. Here was a woman who gave birth to the Son of Promise. And in that, she reminds us of things that we find throughout the Scripture. We think about the idea that, looking in Luke chapter 1 and verse 37, nothing is impossible with God. We think as well about the words of the Lord Himself. Jesus looked at them and said, with man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. Here is a woman who gladly gave up everything of comfort, who trusted God, who trusted her godly husband, who by faith believed that that promise that was made that was seemingly impossible could be fulfilled. went on this pilgrimage faithfully, trusting in God. I think there's a lesson for us that so often God says things that if we are not very, very careful, whether out loud or in our minds, we say, that just simply can't take place. That just simply will not work. Whenever you and I are tempted to do that, think about Sarah. Think about what she was called on to believe and who in faith accepted that and believed it. And when we do that, we can realize that even promises that God can save sin-soaked human beings from their wicked ways will be fulfilled. Sarah was a pilgrim, a part of a godly couple who sets a high standard for the pilgrimage that we're following with God. Let's talk about a third pilgrim on this journey. We know that Abraham and Sarah illustrated to us a great amount of faith, showing us how we should walk upon our pilgrimage. The third of these pilgrims is a man who perhaps teaches us a bit of a different lesson. A man who became entangled on this pilgrimage. How much did Lot, the nephew of Abraham, know about what was going on? We're simply not told. It's somewhat hard to believe, though, that Abraham would not have told him, shared with him, what all of this was about. And he chose to go. And as we look at this, we find that he is going to make a very unfortunate decision. If you will, look back to Genesis with me, chapter 13. And as we look here, we find the account of Lot and what's going on. Abram and Lot are having difficulties here. They have great amounts of flocks between them. Their herdsmen are into it. And so they simply cannot stay together on this journey. And so verse 7, we're told about the strife. Verse 8, Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left, I'll take the right. If you take the right hand, I'll take the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east, and thus they separated from each other. We look at this. Abram gives Lot this very significant choice. Lot allowed his eyes to make the decision for him. Here was a good land. Here was an area that would be fertile. But yet within this region, there were going to be some of the most horrible people that the Bible describes. And yet what we find is that Lot seemingly became a part of this group. I believe chapter 14 records for us warning shots that the Lord fired. Kings were allowed to come in and to take these people of Sodom and Gomorrah, many of their leaders, captive. We look down to verses 11 and 12. It says, "So the enemy took all the possessions of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. They also took Lot, the son of Abram's brother, who was dwelling in Sodom, and his possessions, and went their way." By this point, he had moved not just into the Jordan Valley, but right there in the midst of Sodom. Abraham comes to his rescue, saves him. But nonetheless, Lot stays put where he was. I think he was a pilgrim who was a slow learner. A man who God had shown, this is what happens to the wicked, yet Lot chose to stay there. And in so doing, Lot ended his pilgrimage and he became a resident. It's interesting that Peter again picks up this idea. And I want us to note over in 2 Peter what he has to say. It appears Lot did not lose his faith in this city. Yet, let's note what kind of place he was living in. 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 7 and 8. Lot is used here as an example of how God can rescue, how God can save. But let's note what he says, verse 7. It says, "And if he, God, rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for as that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over their lawless deeds that he saw and heard." Peter gives us a little bit of insight here. He says, yes, the pilgrimage came to a close. Lot moved into this city, but Lot did not lose his sensibilities here. It says that he was vexed, his righteous soul vexed daily because of the things that were happening. All of this wickedness, all of this immorality, all of this homosexuality was troubling to Lot. And Lot did not give up on his morals. He did not lose that sense. But I think what we have to realize is that it did cost him to be here. It did cost him in the things that he saw. What did he lose? Well, we know first of all, he lost his wife. Here was a woman. As he looked, she was hesitant to leave the city. The Lord said, go and do not look back. And she did. And her life was taken from her at this point. And I want you to think about that. You think about as well his daughters. His daughters escaped with him, the only part of his family that did. But what about their morality? How had Sodom influenced them? First of all, they were about to marry men from that city. I think that's a danger sign, isn't it? They were about to marry these men who had grown up in that environment. But secondly, note that horrible sin in which they were involved afterward, where they got their father drunk and they had incestuous relations with him and children were born of that. That's not the kind of behavior you learn with godly people. And I think as well what we understand is that he lost his peace of mind. It says he was troubled daily by the things that were going on here because he had surrounded himself with this wickedness. You and I think about his example. And I think we learn something about our own pilgrimage as well. There's warnings for us here. And I think one of the strongest warnings is when we lose sight of being pilgrims and we look at ourselves as being residents here, people who are at home here, let's not think that the inhabitants are suddenly going to appreciate us and respect our beliefs. Genesis 19:9, you ever paid attention to that verse? As Lot was trying to convince the people of Sodom of what was going to happen, they say, who is this man who has moved in amongst us, who serves as judge over us? That's how they viewed him. Lot came in and he tried to share with them what they needed to do in order to avert catastrophe. And they said, who are you to tell us what to do? I'm afraid sometimes we get so comfortable in this earth, and I think we have become so comfortable in our country because we have a nation whose government traditionally has respected religion and not only respected it, but promoted it. And we somehow think that everything's going to be okay, that everything's going to be all right. Lot teaches us that's not the case. The inhabitants did not appreciate what he had to say. But I think even more striking than that, he teaches us that you never, ever, ever think that your own strength is enough for everybody in the family. I don't know if Lot tried to justify his decision in that way or not. Well, I'll be there. I'll help them. Lot put his family in a very precarious situation. And I don't think there was any one of them who left unscathed. I want you just to contrast Lot's wife and Sarah. Sarah was the pilgrim who didn't look back, who God said, go, and she went. And there's nothing recorded that ever indicated that she regretted that decision in the least. Lot's wife was told to go, and she went, but she wanted to go back. I don't know why. Some have suggested that she had family there. Some have suggested it represented those roots we talked about earlier. This was her home. Whatever the reason, she looked back when God said, don't. And so many times I'm afraid that with our families, if we are not terribly, terribly careful, we think, I'm strong enough for all of us, and these dangers may be there of which I could remove, over which I've got some control, but I'm strong enough to make sure none of us fall. That doesn't work. Our example does a lot. But when we put our families in harm's way where they don't need to be, we are showing ourselves in a very dangerous fashion of ending our pilgrimage and that of our family as well. I think about what the apostle wrote to Timothy when he said, "No soldier gets entangled in civilian pursuit." I think we could say, "No pilgrim gets entangled in earthly pursuits," since his aim is to please the one who enlisted him. Lot was a righteous man, but Lot made mistakes, and those mistakes were very costly. So we look at these three pilgrims, and we find varying things about them. We find faith, we find lack of faith. We find strength, we find weakness. And as we look at all three of these collectively, perhaps the question that we need to end with is this: which pilgrim best describes me? Am I the one who, if the Lord says go, I go? If the Lord says trust, I trust? Or am I the one who's looking toward the well-watered plains of the Jordan? The one who's seeking to find comfort in a journey that's not intended for comfort, but rather to lead us to much better places? Which of those describes me? And when I answer that question, I'll be able to see whether my attitude is one that is seeking to put foundations on this earth, or am I a pilgrim who's searching for a better city?